Whispering Streets. And here is Hope Winslow.
Hello. The whispering streets that lead into the far places are sometimes lonely, but sometimes they have a fugitive warmth about them. Anne Dillon was not always sure of their warmth, but she was very sure of the crowding loneliness. She, one of the most popular debutantes of the season, had met her husband at a reception at a theological seminary almost a quarter of a century ago. They'd fallen in love swiftly, and on their fourth meeting...
Did it ever occur to you, darling, that you might marry a minister?
Frankly, it never did, until I met you. But I think it'll be fun. I've read lots of stories about young ministers. They always start preaching in a white church on a village green. And suddenly they're called to a big city church with a huge congregation. And after that, they're very rich and social and popular and... You're frowning, dearest. Did I say something to make you cross?
Of course not. How on earth could you make me cross? But I'm afraid you'll be disappointed in the future I've planned. You see, I've signed up for a difficult branch of his service.
A difficult branch of his service? What branch, Robert?
I'm half afraid to tell you. Maybe you'll change your mind about me when you know the worst.
I'm afraid I couldn't change my mind or my heart at this stage of the game. Not even if I wanted to. Robert, what is the worst?
I've accepted a call to an isolated territory. I'll be the only minister within a radius of 100 miles or thereabouts.
Oh, my goodness, that's frightening. Why don't they have more ministers?
They can't afford any more. I'll have to travel from community to community, preaching here one Sunday, there the next. My wife will have to travel with me more often than not.
That doesn't scare me. I like to travel. It's always exciting.
This type of travel won't be exciting. Some of it will be sheer drudgery. Although I won't actually have the title, I'll be a home missionary.
A home missionary? I'm sort of confused, Robert.
So am I, dear. We'll both have a lot to learn, I guess. All I know is from hearsay. All I know is the greatness of the need. Darling, if you're going to back out of marrying me, back out now.
Don't talk about backing out. I'd die if we weren't together, Robert, for the rest of our lives. I don't care where we are, as long as we're together.
Then you'll marry me before we go?
Of course I will. If you think I'd let you get away from me, even for a few minutes, you're out of your mind.
So Anne and Robert were married, and they traveled for 2 days and 3 nights on a series of slow, bumpy trains. And when Anne was drooping with fatigue, they disembarked at an unpainted shed and were met by a gray, weather-beaten man who took them to a gray, weather-beaten house in the midst of a gray, weather-beaten landscape. A gray, weather-beaten woman took Anne in charge.
I'm Susan Barstow, child. You're going to stay here with us till you get yourself settled.
Oh, you're very kind to take us in, Mrs. Barstow.
It's a pleasure. We don't have much company when it's pretty company like you. My, you're wearing beautiful clothes, Mrs. Dillon.
I have a lovely trousseau. This suit I'm wearing was bought ready-made, though. I couldn't have it made to order because there wasn't time.
Good. It's finely woven. And that'll wear for 10-20 years, or I miss my guess.
10 or 20 years? I've never worn a suit for more than 2 seasons in my whole life.
That's the way city folks are, I guess. What on earth do you do with your clothes when you stop wearing them?
We send them to the church for missionary boxes. I didn't realize what I was saying. I'm a missionary myself now. At least my husband is.
Your husband's almost as handsome as you are pretty. Oh, you won't have an easy time finding a house to live in, Mrs. Dillon. I might as well warn you.
It was dusk when we drove up from the station, so I wasn't able to see the town. Are there any little white houses standing around the village green?
Goodness, no. There isn't any village green, dear. The grass don't grow easy hereabouts. Weather's so uncertain, paint peels about as fast as you put it on, so none of our houses is white.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back again. But first,
if you were studying a foreign language and came across this phrase, what would it mean?
あなたに謝礼を与える.
Well, this is Japanese, which means you will be rewarded. You may not be in Japan, but you will be rewarded in many ways if you learn the language of the country where you are stationed. For one of the best ways to enjoy your tour of duty is to get to know the people. And the best way of getting to know the people is by learning their language. If you make an attempt to speak the language of the country you are in, the people will recognize it as a sincere gesture of friendship. Learning a new language will open an entire new world of interesting things and earn many new friends for you. Yes, you will be rewarded if you give yourself a break and learn their language.
And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
So, in due time, Anne and Robert Dillon found themselves an ugly gray house, just like the house in which Susan Barstow and her husband lived. And though Anne's lip trembled on moving day, Susan pretended not to notice.
Well, don't look like much now, but once the roof's mended and we tack porch on the front of it, why, it'll take a new lease on life.
Do you think I could plant flowers beside the porch? Just last night, Robert read something from the Bible about making a wilderness blossom like the rose, and I thought how much it would help if I could plant flowers.
You can plant them, child, but they won't grow. Soil that's too poor for grass is too poor for flowers.
But if I can't have grass and white paint and flowers and all the rest, what's left?
Spreading the gospel, dear. Passing on the word of the Lord to those who need it. Service. That's what's left.
Spreading the gospel. Passing on the word of the Lord. Service. In the years that followed, Anne learned to measure the spreading distance by 20 and 30 miles. She learned the meaning of service, too.
In a parish like mine, darling, church is more than a religion. It's an aching need.
Then why do the people sit like wooden Indians while you're preaching? Sometimes I think they don't understand a single thing you're saying.
Oh, they understand. But it's hard for them to express themselves. And Anne, you must admit that they sing loud enough.
They bellow.
Well, singing's their outlet. It's their escape, their release. Many of my parishioners don't see anybody to talk to for days on end. They get spiritually as well as physically tongue-tied. Do you understand what I'm trying to say when I preach?
Of course I do. I adore your sermons. They're honest and earnest and eloquent.
You're an angel.
Oh, I wish I were, really. But I'm far from it. I'm full of assorted resentments. Sometimes when you go off alone on your what do you call it, Robert?
My circuit. In a novel or a short story, I suppose they'd call me a circuit rider.
A circuit rider, huh? Following cow paths that a car couldn't travel, even if you had a car.
I'm getting to feel more at home on horseback than I do in a chair.
Robert, I must tell you, I don't feel at home in an empty house, and I'm in an empty house so much of the time, especially when you're away for a whole week. I thought when we got married, you'd always take me with you.
I didn't realize that the road would be too rugged at times for a woman. But civilized here on the outskirts of town, nothing can happen to you.
I know there aren't wild Indians or cattle rustlers or... But I might be ill, and then... Robert, dear?
Yes, dear.
I'm going to have a baby.
Oh, but Anne. Oh, but darling. You're so young. So inexperienced. Well, there aren't any good doctors or hospitals in this community. I didn't realize what I was letting you in for, sweetheart. Until this instant.
Anne was happy during the months that followed. She didn't mind being alone because she had tiny clothes to make, because she had a new dream. And then one night, Robert was away calling on a man who was seriously ill. The blizzard came up and the house shook on its foundation, and Anne remembered some kittens in a lean-to out back. She went to fetch them, slipped on the icy ground. They found her unconscious on the kitchen floor as she dragged herself indoors. And through long, desperate weeks, she didn't care what happened. When she was convalescing, her heart was filled with bitterness.
It's all over, Robert. Over and done with. You have time to pass on the Lord's word. But he hadn't time to worry about our baby.
Anne, please don't be so bitter. He's aware even of a sparrow's fall. And you must try to understand.
I'll try, but...
We must tell ourselves that life will be cast in a different mold sometime, that there'll be another baby sometime. That things will be easier sometime.
And things could be easier now, dear, if you forced the issue. Write to the church board. Ask them to give you a charge in some small town where we can be close together always. Where you can be near me when I need you.
I don't blame you for wanting what you want, darling. But Anne, there's this. I know my parishioners inside out, and they know me inside out. And they trust me, even though they're too inarticulate to tell me so. The man I was calling on when the blizzard came, it wasn't a needless sacrifice, dear. I gave him faith and courage. He died smiling. They know how you feel, darling. The whole parish, widespread as it is, sends you its sympathy.
How kind of the parish.
Well, you were ill. I preached to the biggest congregations I've ever had. I can't ask to be taken away from these people just now, Anne. It won't be so bad. In a few months, spring's coming, and then it'll be summer.
And after that, winter'll come again with more blizzards.
I'll send you back to your people for the winters.
I wouldn't leave you for anything. But, darling, promise me that the instant you feel they can get along without you, the very instant, Robert, you'll ask to be released from this territory. You must take me to some place where we can enjoy what's left of life.
Anne, tell me this. Do you love me as much as you did when we were first married?
More, dear. But differently. It's as if a fire's died down on a hearth. The hearth's warm, but the flame's gone.
You're weak now. You'll be stronger when it's spring. The fire will come back. There'll be a reflection of flame, at least.
And the reflection of that fire did come back, even though there weren't any more babies. And spring followed spring, and winters came and went. And all at once, Robert and Anne...
Darling, it's a shame that you have to ride miles on end, that you have to preach to granite faces, that sometimes you're forced to use haylofts for pulpits.
The Savior himself preached in the wilderness. I'm content, Anne.
I'm resigned, but I'm not content. Not by any means. I think of the life I used to lead. I think of my old friends.
Well, you have new friends. Women come from miles around to see you, to talk with you.
They don't talk with me. They listen. Once I was young and life was gay. But it isn't gay anymore. I hardly ever smile, let alone laugh.
You've made the countryside smile. Take your garden, for instance.
I've forced it to grow by sheer willpower. It didn't want to grow.
garden growing because a woman had forced it to grow, and the country was growing, too. The wilderness was becoming less of a wilderness. It wasn't blossoming like the rose, but villages were becoming towns. And then, all at once, Anne and Robert had been married for 20 years. And the cow paths had become roads, and Robert had a car. One Sunday morning, as he and Anne drove across country...
You're looking mighty pretty this morning, Mrs. Dillon. I'm glad I married a woman with naturally curly hair.
Naturally curly, but gray.
Every home missionary's wife should have naturally curly hair. It makes life so much more decorative. Now, we're talking like a pair of young lovers. It hasn't been such a bad life, darling.
But think how wonderful it could have been if we'd had a white house on a village green. If you'd earned a big city church. Your sermons are so inspiring, so full of meaning. Robert, it isn't fair to waste them on a few people. It just isn't fair.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back.
Suppose for a moment that instead of being one of today's men and women in uniform, you were to go back to the time of the Civil War and become Billy Yank or Johnny Reb. How was military life 100 years ago? What about off-duty recreation, for example? Well, sports were certainly popular, and among the different sports, baseball was the favorite. Some of the rules were different, and bat and ball were sometimes a trimmed hickory limb and a walnut wrapped in yarn, but it was the good old American game. Judging from the scores, however, there was a shortage of good pitchers. The 9th New York Regiment once defeated the 51st New Yorkers by a score of 58-19. Other popular sports among Civil War servicemen were swimming, boxing, foot racing, wrestling, and even snowballing. Hunting served as both a recreation and a way of obtaining food. Today, the value of sports to servicemen and women is fully realized. Every effort is made to provide a well-rounded athletic program, which includes many of the sports which were popular as long ago as the days of Billy Yank and Johnny Reb.
And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
As Anne listened to the sermon her husband preached that day, she was wondering if the people sitting so stolidly in the pews had any idea of its magnificence. And then she noticed that one man, a stranger, was leaning forward with rapt attention. When the service was over and she stood on the church porch, the stranger joined her.
Pardon me, madam. Will you tell me that preacher's name?
His name is Robert Dillon. He's my husband. I'm Ann Dillon.
And I'm Morgan Kellogg. I'm on my way back from Ma Higgins' Dude Ranch in all Colorado.
I've heard of the fabulous Ma Higgins.
When my car was being serviced, I dropped in at the church. Your husband's wasted here, Mrs. Dillon.
I guess I've said the same thing.
Your husband could make preaching history. Will you take my pen, Mrs. Dillon, and write your address in my notebook?
Gladly.
It was just 2 weeks later that Robert Dillon received a call from one of the most important churches in the nation. It was the miracle for which Anne had been waiting. Robert seemed puzzled.
What now, Anne?
This. You've given the best years of your life to being a circuit rider. Now there are other men, young, anxious to be of service, who can take over. And you can give the people in cities the benefit of your experience and wisdom. A beautiful city church. An apartment. A maid to do the work. Friends who talk our own language.
Do our neighbors still talk an alien tongue, Anne?
They're kind. They like us. But there's no enthusiasm, no affection.
That they're able to express.
I want expression, Robert. I want people to say what they're thinking. I don't want affection that's planted too deep.
I see. Very well, Anne. I'll accept the call to the city. For your sake.
So a new minister was summoned from the graduating class of the theological seminary, and Anne and Robert drove into the county seat on a certain winter evening, just a few days before Christmas, to say goodbye to their parish. All the churches had banded together to give them a send-off. And when it was all over, they drove away through throngs of cheering, crying people to the gray, weather-beaten house in which they'd lived for almost a quarter of a century. And once more...
Susan Barstow was telling me she had an embroidered handkerchief you gave her once when she admired it.
She said she'd kept it all these years. It was her favorite possession. She tried to give it back to me tonight, Robert.
You've been her ideal all these years.
An ideal with clay feet.
No, darling, no. Another woman told me that her husband had made a cradle for the baby who never lived.
And another woman told me that she cherished a little sliver from a cut glass pitcher I broke one day when I had a tea party. Hundreds of people telling me little things. Dear things. Precious things. Giving me clumsy gifts they'd made by hand.
The gifts of the Magi.
Yes. Robert, what are you staring at?
The door. I was thinking that never since we've been here have we had a lock on this door. When we get to the city, we must keep our door locked, I guess. People do in cities.
It'll seem strange to lock doors. When we're in the city, a great many things will seem strange and lonely. Robert, I didn't realize until tonight that our people were stolid because they were shy. I didn't realize how much they loved me. How much I loved them. I miss them so.
We'll still have each other when we're in the city, dear.
We'll always have each other, Robert. You're a minister of the gospel, and I'm a real minister's wife at long last. Whether your path leads to the city or to the country or to another wilderness, I'll walk it with you, gladly and gratefully.
Often each one of us has lived in the center of a dream without realization. When a woman kisses the man she loves, she sometimes closes her eyes. Maybe it's because she's afraid to see too much happiness. Well, this is Hope Winslow saying goodbye from the Whispering Streets.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Peggy Weber, and John Stevenson. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Coverley.
Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.